This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's Thursday, August 22nd, 2019. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on today's edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. WBBM News Time, 12:04, and the Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Apple is set to release a host of new products this fall, including fresh models of the iPhone. That's in our next segment. But right now, the yield curve inverted once again today as fears the Feds won't save the economy from a recession. Joining us now is Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg, based in New York. Carl, welcome back to the program. When it comes to that flip-flopping yield curve, what kind of data can we derive from it? Is this still strong evidence of a recession down the pike, maybe in 2020 or 2021?
Well, boy, we're on the hair's breadth right now. It's perfectly flat as I look at twos, tens on the yield curve. So an extremely flat yield curve is a signal to the central bank, the Federal Reserve, that they have basically pushed policy far enough and should really consider maybe easing off to some degree. And we already saw that in July, on July 31st, when the Fed cut rates. But the very next day, the president's Twitter account lit up. Up and launched the next escalation of the trade war, and that caused a risk-off attitude, which drove the dollar higher and drove the yield curve even flatter. And so the Fed is going to have to take additional measures to add some steepness back into the yield curve. If it really inverts, that can be a troubling signal of recession. But I think the recessionistas and the nattering nabobs of negativism at the moment are getting a little bit overdone because the economy is still performing well. The labor market is sound. Consumer spending is robust. And I think we can eke out 2% plus economic growth in the second half of the year.
Well, anytime you can quote Spiro Agnew on the Noon Business
Very
Hour, that qualifies as a win. Let's talk about now Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where all of the presidents of the regional Federal Reserve banks, they've got their mountain casual outfits at the ready. They're attending the annual Economic Policy Symposium. What kind of news can we expect out of Jackson Hole, and will it be enough to move markets in one way or the other?
Well, we've seen from past conferences out in Jackson Hole that the comments from speakers, and especially from the Fed chair, can, in fact, move the markets. So there certainly is a warranted concern to pay close attention to what is said tomorrow. That being said, again, the theme of the conference is challenges to monetary policy, so very apropos for the current climate. But I don't think that Jay Powell is really going to light the world on fire tomorrow in his remarks. Instead, I think he will acknowledge that the Fed has been correcting its course, and maybe a little bit larger correction is warranted, but he's not going to unveil dramatic new courses for policy or another round of quantitative easing or anything of that nature. It will give really a good insight to how he's viewing the economic landscape and what he thinks the appropriate prescription is. Now, my team updated our forecast of what we think that appropriate prescription is, and I think that's going to mean that the Fed cuts by a quarter percentage point in September, again in October, and again in December. That will uninvert that yield curve that you launched the segment discussing. If the 10-year yield falls further, then maybe the Fed even continues cutting into next year. But three more cuts this year should be enough.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Carl Riccadonna, Chief U.S. Economist and Bloomberg, based in New York. Coming up, a preview of Apple's new iPhone set to be released next month.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Apple reportedly plans to unveil three new iPhones next month that'll be packed with major upgrades. Joining us now with a preview is Mark Gurman, Apple reporter for Bloomberg, based in Los Angeles. Mark, welcome back to the program. What's in store for these new pro models of iPhones and iPads?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And, you know, to answer your question, cameras are going to be the big focus this year. There's going to be big improvements to both the lenses, the hardware, but also the software. There's going to be artificial intelligence integration. So, for example, you could take a picture, if someone gets caught out of the frame or they're making a weird expression, the AI could automatically repair the photo based on how you're more in a frame, much higher resolution, live editing during filming video, far higher quality. So if you're, you know, a camera buff, this is a big upgrade for you.
Mark, it's interesting you mentioned the camera upgrades. Marist College came out with its mindset list for incoming college freshmen, all born in the year 2001. And one of the items was, if you're a college freshman this year, phones have always been used for taking pictures. So the camera has become an integral part of the smartphone. Now, how does the iPhone camera stack up with the other cameras in, say, Samsung or other phones in the smartphone space?
So right now, cameras are moving away in terms of importance from hardware and shifting a lot towards the software side. And right now, I feel that Google has the edge with their Pixel phones. Now, they're not as popular as Samsung or Apple, nowhere near, but their AI work is fantastic. In terms of Apple versus Samsung, I would say Apple has the leg up. But I think after these new phones launch, Apple is going to take that number one spot.
Now, is this going to be a situation, as we usually see outside of Apple stores when Apple unveils a new iPhone or iPad, that we're going to see long lines of people camping out outside the Apple store on Michigan Avenue to be the first to get their hands on one?
That's a good question. I think the days of massive lines outside of the stores are pretty much gone. But, I mean, you mentioned the flagship Michigan Ave store in Chicago. That one, I think you will see some lines. I think at the flagship stores, you still see quite a few people going, but nothing like we've seen before in years past, well before the Michigan Avenue or the new Michigan Avenue store opened.
Mark Gurman, Apple reporter for Bloomberg based in Los Angeles. Thank you for joining us this afternoon with the insights. Coming up next, a look at the new face of the retirement crisis.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
If you are a millennial, which means you were born between 1981 and 1996, you are now a part of the largest living generation in the U.S., and the good news is you're expected to live longer. But that longer lifespan is both a blessing and a curse because you could be facing a retirement financial crisis. Joining us now is Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, welcome back to the program. Is this retirement crisis a function of the fact that most millennials graduated from college just in time to watch the economy collapse in 2008, and they've been behind the eight ball ever since?
Yeah, that is definitely one factor. You mentioned another factor, their life expectancy, which ironically creates an additional financial burden. The problem is that there's almost a perfect storm with regard to the retirement prospects from a financial point of view for the millennials. Those are just two of several factors that will affect it. And the number of projections that I looked at for a column on the subject found that in comparison to their prospects, the other generations that are older, even though they face problems of their own, have far fewer problems than the millennials will face. And so that's the reason why I'm referring to this as the real retirement crisis out there is for millennials, even though it's decades away. If we project the present into the future, it's always a risky thing to do that. But when you project it out, it's a very dismal picture.
Now, does this mean that as a generation, when they do hit retirement, their savings are not going to be nearly as robust, and then they're going to have a hard time spreading that over, well into maybe their hundreds?
Yeah, I'm afraid that's right. So if you look at it, you mentioned the financial crisis. A lot of people started out their as it were, earning careers after college or graduate school right as the economy took a downturn. So any savings that they had or investments are, if anything, probably not back to even. And secondly, they probably have more college debt than any other previous generation. Thirdly, the markets are just not producing the kind of returns that would be required on a modest set of savings to have a retirement portfolio that's even as big as previous generations, much less the need, as you mentioned, because of life expectancy. You're going to need more money than previous generations just to live at the level that previous generations were able to retire at. So, as I say, it's this perfect storm. All of them together suggest it's going to be a big problem.
Well, this seems like a, an issue that could potentially rewrite politics as we move away from a post-World War II economic context to whatever the 21st century economy is going to be.
Well, that's right. I mean, and the compounded, we have a real financial difficulty with regard to Social Security. The projections are from the Social Security Administration that Social Security Trust Fund will run out of money in the year 2034, at which point they'll only be able to pay 79 cents on the dollar of everything previously committed. And since that was actually well before when the millennials will start retiring, which is around 2045 or 2050, we see that we have a huge issue just there alone, since if there is as big of a financial crisis, a retirement crisis, as I think there is for millennials, more of them than previous generations will have to rely on Social Security at the very time that Social Security may be struggling, which is a, when you talk about a political need for a focus on a solution, I think Social Security becomes more important than ever of being financially healthy.
Well, I'm glad we can serve up this cup of sunshine during the noon hour. Mark Culbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Thanks for joining us, as always. Still to come, Technology Thursday, we'll look at AI cameras and keeping kids safe.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBM. Cameras and artificial intelligence are increasingly being used to keep kids safe at school. The price of gas expected to fall unless Mother Nature says otherwise. The University of Chicago Library has received nearly 3,000 vintage prints by a famous photographer. And mass shooting plots are thwarted in California and Florida. WBBM Business, the markets are mixed right now. The Dow in positive territory, up 85 points. The NASDAQ is down 17. The S&P 500 is up 1.5. AccuWeather says intervals of clouds and sun today, cooler, less humid than recent days, breezy, especially along the lakefront. High today of 78. Right now we have 72 degrees at O'Hare. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Stocks are mixed this afternoon. We're joined now by Ryan Battle, director at Performance Trust Capital Partners and advisor at PTS at Management, based in Chicago. Brian, is markets seem to be sitting still after a couple of weeks of wild twists and turns. Does this mean that investors just simply have their eyes turned west on Jackson Hole, Wyoming, to see what Jerome Powell has to say tomorrow?
Yeah, I think that's right, Rob. There is some fatigue. We have made back some of the wild moves that we had last week. And remember, those moves that we had last week were caused by political headlines, really not economic fundamental changes. So the market corrected. You know, investors, if you sat tight, you know, the market came back and we've gotten those gains back. But just remember, so far this year, the S&P 500, which is probably the broadest measure of the market, is up 16% year to date. But year over year, August 18 to August 19, we're only up 2%, 2.1%. 5%. So it hasn't been a raging rally in stocks in a longer time horizon. It's a reasonable amount of rally in the stock market for the amount of growth that we have. So yes, the important news this week is coming out of Jackson Hole. Markets have been driven a lot by central bank policy. So Jerome Powell is going to be giving a speech tomorrow as the chairman of the Federal Reserve. But this week, we've had three local Fed presidents, Rosengren, George, and Harker, have all said, we don't think it's time to cut rates again. So there's definitely some indecision and some dispute at the Federal Reserve whether we need to cut interest rates when the 10-year Treasury note is at a 1.6 and the 30-year Treasury note is just over 2%, which is near the all-time low for the 30-year. So maybe not. We won't get a cut with rates being this low.
In a world where the most powerful device on earth is an iPhone in the White House attached to the president's thumbs, can the Federal Reserve Chairman, can he be proactive or reactive in his remarks tomorrow?
Yeah, the Federal Reserve Chairman has to be very careful because we're at a very treacherous or tenuous time here in central bank history. You know, the Federal Reserve has tended to be apolitical. They like to say that, but you know, they are political. They do read the newspaper, and they go to dinner parties and they talk to people. But the Federal Reserve is being threatened from the White House, which is unusual, to really not much effect. I think the Federal Reserve is just reacting to what the market conditions are. But we're used to this president. He says things and he uses Twitter. So I don't know what the political influence is of the White House on the Fed, but the Fed does have to be careful to make sure that they don't look like they're reacting to political pressure, and they're doing their job is to foster conditions for full employment and have a stable value of the currency, which is the only things that they're supposed to be doing.
We'll talk about a couple of story stocks today, both in the retail space. Nordstrom shares jumped more than 15% after the retailer reporting quarterly earnings and revenue that topped analyst expectations. The company citing inventory and expense discipline for the strong results. It's always notable when you talk about a retailer that's actually doing well in this environment. And is Nordstrom, just because it's an upscale brand, are they able to kind of shield themselves from the other economic headwinds hitting the retail sector?
Yeah, Rob, that's a great question, because Nordstrom is a little bit different. Remember, they're smaller, they are very upscale, and they're family-owned. You know, they're public, but it's still the family's very involved. And interestingly enough, the stock on Nordstrom jumps. Revenue went down 5%, but their earnings went up. So Nordstrom employed some expense discipline. So sales went down, earnings went up, and they cited good inventory control. So their shares are up 13% on Wednesday, but remember, the stock is down 43% this year. So they've lagged, but this looks like good news for Nordstrom, that despite the conditions in the economy, remember, the stock market's, you know, gyrating around, but the U.S. economy is pretty good. About 70% of the economy is driven by consumers in the U.S. We're very domestic-focused. And a company like Nordstrom, which only has less than 150 full-price stores in the U.S., they're not that exposed to real estate, which is something that's very difficult for people like, bigger companies like, Macy's or JCPenney or Kohl's, where they have a real estate problem attached to their clothing business. So Nordstrom looks like they're managing, and that's why their stock is up, is because they've reacted to the facts on the ground, and they're doing well. They're for what's going on and for the business that they're in, and they're also expanding their e-commerce. You know, their business, they're getting something under 30% of their business, 20% of the business is e-commerce, and they're adjusting to the new economy.
Well, the other retail story stock is interesting to talk about, because if you drive through any shopping mall or shopping development in the Chicago area and elsewhere, you see a big box store that used to be a Sports Authority. And yet its arch rival, Dick's Sporting Goods, doing very well. It actually beat the street in its latest quarterly results. So what are they doing right?
So Dick's Sporting Goods did announce they had a great call. You know, the two things that helped them is that Dick's Sporting Goods said, hey, our earnings per share is pretty good. They met the customer retail expectation. And they also said that they have a good feeling for the rest of the year. Their forward guidance is very positive. Inventory is 8% higher than it used to be this quarter compared to a year ago quarter. So Dick's feels like it's good. Things are going well enough that they had to have more stuff on the shelf. So they're doing well. Second quarter sales are up store, you know, one store compared to another one, stuff about 3%. And e-commerce is up 21% in the second quarter. So remember, a couple of years ago, everybody was sure Amazon was going to put everybody out of business. You know, it'd be the end of Walmart. But what's happened is all these retailers have adjusted. They've got a brick and mortar store, and they're inventing an online store. So Dick's has reacted. You know, they cut out firearm sales at Dick's, and it really hasn't hurt their business. And their forward guidance is positive. So their stock is doing better as a bright spot here in a market that's looking for good stories in retail.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Brian Battle, Director at Performance Trust Capital Partners and advisor at PT Asset Management based in Chicago. Still to come, using cameras and AI to keep kids safe at school.
Money Talks, as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Today we're talking about the use of cameras and artificial intelligence technology to keep schools safe. We're joined by Nick Demchenko, Business Development Manager at Encompass Audiovisual here in Chicago. Nick, welcome to the program. Now, your company does work with the company that makes the cameras, or are you working with school districts?
Both. So we are an integrator and an installation company. So we offer the solutions. So the main the camera that's kind of leading the charge right now with cloud-based and AI is a company called Verkada that we started working with a little over a year ago. So we represent them in the area and integrate into not only schools but other enterprise-level installations.
Now, as far as the school business is concerned, who are the big customers here? Is it public school districts? Is it private schools, parochial schools? Who's knocking on your door?
It could be anybody. We've been working with all types of different schools, small, large, small, medium, and large. It's anybody. A lot of schools already have camera solutions in it, and as their cameras may be analog or getting outdated and they're looking for updates, it's really any school that you just described that we're working with and talking with right now.
Now, how does the AI work?
So basically, it's compiling data. So, in a traditional model with security cameras and closed circuit TV, it would take, you know, teams of people to look for information when we're looking for something or somebody and an incident that happened. So essentially what that AI is doing is it's gathering data at a much faster level and giving us real-time responses. Not only that, but it's getting to the point where it's gathering data and it's making predictions about actions and things that may be happening in the future.
Now, is this simply a case of the district or a principal could upload pictures of maybe a suspicious person who's been hanging around campus or some mugshot of a local vandal or something like that, and the camera could recognize the face and then alert authorities?
Absolutely. So Verkada specifically, it's a software-based company out in the out of San Mateo Valley in California, cloud-based. And literally, we've had a camera in our office for over a year, and they pushed out an update last week where now it has the AI capabilities. So you could anything from searching by gender, searching by shirt color, by pant color, or even what you just mentioned is we could take a picture of a local suspect of some type and put that in the put it into the system, and that camera will send us an alert if the camera recognizes that face while that person or suspect is on premise.
Obviously, there are some thorny constitutional issues that come into play here. Have those been considered, or is this simply a case of you cross that bridge when you finally arrive there?
Yeah, I would say more on the latter side of things right now. I think the nice thing about the solution is that it has all of these different capabilities, and a school district or a business would use those as they saw necessary. So just because there's certain features on the camera and the software that it has doesn't mean it has to be used, and there's probably greater discussion within school boards and school districts that need to occur. But the nice thing about it is that the technology keeps improving, and it's there and ready to be used when they are ready to use it.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Nick Demchenko, Business Development Manager at Encompass Audiovisual, based in Chicago. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday, and still to come, a look at fall gas prices.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
As we hit the end of the summer driving season, you might wonder where gas prices are headed this fall. Joining us with the answer is Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst at the Price Group and Fox Business News contributor here in Chicago. Phil, welcome back to the program. What is our fall forecast at the pump?
You know, Rob, every time the leaves start to fall from the trees, gas prices tend to follow. So I've already seen some leaves falling from the tree. I know some people are rooting for fall, and you know, one of the reasons why I think that is because they like lower gasoline prices. And you know, every year in the fall, once we start getting away from those summertime blends of gasoline, prices start to come down. The refiners have done their job, and we're starting to see that. And it's pretty amazing that we're seeing it here in Illinois, considering the fact that we jacked up our gasoline taxes and our demand for gasoline is near a record high.
Well, people still need to go there. They have to follow their Big Ten football team around the Midwest, or they have to go the apple-picking trip and post the pictures to social media. So there's always a need to drive somewhere.
There really is, especially at this time of year. And there's going to be a very good demand, I think, over the Labor Day holiday. And believe it or not, even with the increased taxes for gasoline, we're probably going to be paying less this Labor Day than we did a year ago. So that's great news. And it really comes at a time where the U.S. consumer is extremely strong. I mean, you look at some of the earnings from Target this week and from Home Depot and Lowe's. You know, the consumer is strong, and when they feel confident about the economy, they drive a lot, so the roads are going to be packed.
How is domestic oil production these days? Is it still going strong enough to kind of insulate the American consumer from any instability abroad?
I think it is. I mean, at this point, it's shown incredible resilience. It's hanging at about 12.3 million barrels a day, which was a number that was thought to be impossible just a few years ago. And I think it has created a buffer in the global economy away from some of these threats that we've seen with Iran, that we've seen, you know, around the globe. In fact, I couldn't imagine, you know, say 10 years ago, possibility that Iran would seize an oil tanker in the Strait of Hormuz and oil prices, you know, wouldn't be up, you know, $10 a barrel and gasoline prices shooting up a dollar. And now, you know, we've seen some modest increases because of these risks, but it's because of the U.S. energy producer, we are getting that buffer against those price shocks that we used to experience on a regular basis.
Well, we've been having these conversations for a very long time, and it used to be when there was any hint of saber rattling between the U.S. and Iran that gas prices shot to $5 mm-hmm. a gallon, and that seems like a thing of the past.
It does, I think, in the near term, but at the same time, you can't ever not worry about it, because the risk can still happen. And if supplies do get shut down in the Strait of Hormuz, even for a short period of time, you know, even though the buffer is bigger than it has been, it wouldn't mean that we would be totally immune to a price shock in the future.
Phil Flynn, senior market analyst with the Price Group and Fox Business News contributor based in Chicago. Thanks for joining us, as always, on the Noon Business Hour. You'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.